Welcome to Connect the Dots podcast, presented by Nine Dots and hosted by Jeffrey Klein. We explore stories of success and their multitude of dots that are connected along the way. Sharing these stories, our aim is to provide some context to the path of success, which is often paved with obstacles, challenges, victories, and celebrations. Thank you for listening. Here is your host, Jeffrey.
This episode is amazing as we have a truly inspirational guest in Judge Renee Cardwell Hughes. She shares her story and her beautiful approach on how to live a powerful life. Take a listen. You'll be glad you did. My guest today is the Honorable Renee Cardwell Hughes, who has served as the Regional Chief Executive Officer of the American Red Cross since 2011. Prior to this, Judge Hughes served as a trial judge in the Court of Common Pleas in Philadelphia for over 15 years. Judge Hughes serves on the Board of Directors of Independence Blue Cross, the Greater Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce, the Public Health Management Corporation, and the Joseph J. Peters Institute. Judge Hughes currently teaches at Drexel University, Villanova University School of Law, and Temple University School of Law. Welcome, Judge Hughes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I will say, I have taught at all those universities. At this moment in time, disaster response has...
Taken you away from your teaching.
Yeah, for a moment.
Well, I'm sure the students miss you. So we start at the beginning. Can you please tell us where you were born and what your parents did for a living?
So I'm from Lynchburg, Virginia. I am the oldest of five. My mother and father are what I would consider to be very regular people. My mother graduated from high school. My father did not. My mother worked for General Electric in Lynchburg, Virginia. Mostly what she did, though, was make sure the five of us had dreams. And my father worked three jobs, and his job was to make sure that whatever my mother wanted happened.
I'm familiar with that. I have that kind of relationship with my wife.
My father was, he worked in a paper mill. He worked in a foundry where you carve granite. And he worked as the high school janitor. He drove cab on the weekends. When you have five kids, you do whatever it takes.
I only have three, so I only have two jobs. And as a kid, you said, I love that, you know, that your mom's job was to let you guys have dreams. Mm-hmm. So did you have a dream of what you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
I did. It was really fascinating. So I wanted to be a pediatrician. And one of the things that I'm very, very committed to is showing young people the complete range of possibilities, because you really do have to see it to believe that it exists and that you can achieve it. And so in my hometown, most African Americans were teachers, they were laborers, there was one doctor, you know, there was no lawyer when I was growing up, that came much later, there were ministers. So I wanted to be a doctor. Until I got to University of Virginia. And when I got to University of Virginia, I discovered intellectual freedom.
We'll get back there in one second. I don't want to leave your childhood just yet.
Okay.
So can you think of, you know, a lesson that you learned early on that sort of had an impact on how you approach life?
Oh, absolutely. So it's very interesting. I laugh because there are two things. When I left home to go to kindergarten, my father walked me up the block, carrying my lunchbox with me, and he said that at that time there were three behind me, but there ultimately were four behind me, and he said, "They will succeed if you succeed. You have to pave the path for them."
Did you feel pressure from that, or
no? I felt
motivation?
Honored. I felt honored that this was a really big deal, that I had to do well. And actually, I'm from a small town. But it's proven true all my life, because it actually ties into the next lesson that haunts me and drives me and motivates me. When I left to go to University of Virginia, my dad said, "I gave you my good name. It's what I expect you to bring me back." And I live my life by those two principles, that my behavior will actually either open doors for those behind me or it'll close doors for those behind me. And all I have in life is my name. My bank account is irrelevant if I don't have a good name. So those things drive who I am, they drive how I think, they drive how I interact with people.
That's impressive. So growing up, aside from your, it seems like your father was a big influence, did you have any other sort of role models that you looked up to?
Yeah, I did, actually. They come in stages, but one is dominant and constant, and that's Thurgood Marshall. Mm. And, I mean, Thurgood Marshall was a massive intellect, massive. And he was driven, and he was really creative, and he approached life the way I do, that there is no problem that we can't solve. You can crack it. So if the law doesn't work for you, change the law.
Amazing. And is there any point in your life where you felt like that kind of catalyst to attack the world in that way, to solve these problems?
I still feel it that way.
But was there anything, when you grew up, where there was a moment where you said that kind of shifted for you, like, and you kind of got it? Was there any sort of defining moment?
I thought about this quite a bit, and the moment that stands in my mind, there are actually a couple, but the first one, the very, very first one, is when I was little, Martin Luther King Jr. was coming to Lynchburg. He was coming to march in Lynchburg with the pastor of my family church. My grandmother went to this church, my mother, you know, we
wow.
did. And I asked my daddy if I could go.
How old were you?
I was probably seven.
What?
I asked if I could go. And my dad said, if you go to jail for doing something good, I will sell my soul to come get you. He says, but if you're doing something bad, if you're doing drugs, you will rot. I was like, the man was serious.
That's like, deadly serious.
He was serious. He was like, okay, I can do good stuff. I can break rules as long as I'm breaking them for the right reason. You know?
It's a powerful lesson as a little kid.
Yeah. And, but he was very serious about that.
What was your first paying job?
I have worked since I was 14. Mm-hmm. And so my very, very, very first paying job was as a receptionist, is too strong a word, but I sat at the desk saying hello to people who came into a Army recruiting station because they took young high school interns. And then I got a job gift wrapping packages. Child, I am a great gift wrapper.
I am not. It's one of my flaws for sure, and thankfully, again, my wife Nita is good. So
thank goodness, because your kids would be like, "Oh, Daddy, wrap this."
Well, when I wrap things for her, she's like, "I'm like, well, you have to teach me to be a little bit better." I have the store to it, you know.
Yeah.
I could have used you a few times, I think. Now, where did you go to college, and how did that shape kind of your early career about life?
So I went to University of Virginia undergrad, and I am what is known as an Eccles Scholar. And an Eccles Scholar means you have complete intellectual freedom. You can take any class that you can convince the professor that you can handle. So the prerequisites don't apply to you as long as you can convince the professor that you can perform. So University of Virginia was a phenomenal place for me to go. But the funny thing about it is that I told you my mother and father didn't get to go to college. Mm-hmm. It was my mother's dream that not only I would go to University of Virginia, but that when I graduated, that she would give me pearls. So my mom and daddy gave me pearls when I graduated from UVA. So it was the only school I applied to. Yep, it was the only school I applied to.
And so as an Eccles Scholar, did you have a major?
I studied economics, mm-hmm. but that was by choice. I didn't have to have a major.
Interesting.
Right. I ended up studying
economics. Does that still exist, that scholarship?
Oh yeah, Eccles Scholars are a really big deal. You know, for all Thomas Jefferson's flaws, one of the things he did right in life was University of Virginia. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think I could have enjoyed that. No, I ended up with two majors because I couldn't.
Because you couldn't decide,
yeah,
right?
No, if it comes
yeah,
out.
I mean, college is a great time for people to get to know themselves and to figure out who they are, because we all come to college with preconceived notions of what we're supposed to do.
And is there someone, whether it was earlier on or in college, that sort of changed the course of what you wanted to do with your life?
Well, there are several people. When I was in the seventh grade in middle school, I had a
My daughters are in seventh grade.
Lovely. I had a history teacher who said to me, we studied period, so we didn't really study history or English. We studied periods of time, so we looked at the politics, the food, the culture, the theater, everything about a period of time to help us understand completely why things were happening in society. So I loved this approach to education because you don't learn in silos. You don't live in silos, you know. So for me, this really worked well because it helped me to connect the dots. But this particular professor said to me that with all the challenges in the world we face, the world would be a better place when everyone looked like me.
Wow.
And it wasn't about me as in pretty or not pretty. It was about me as in I'm biracial, and I am an African-American woman, but my mother is Caucasian, and she raised us to be proud African-Americans. But that's what he meant. And he's like, when people got over their head trips about things that don't matter, skin color does not matter, who you worship does not matter, as long as you are a person of integrity and faith, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you love, as long as you love. That's what matters in life, and that's the lesson he was trying to teach me. You know,
that's a fairly enlightened perspective, I think, even currently.
Yes, and this is from a Southern white man in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Yeah, that sounds rare. But just for a moment, I thought I'd kind of ask. So, having that, you know, the racial challenges of growing up, did you had this obviously amazing teacher who saw well beyond that, and. But did you ever find in your career race or, you know, had an impact in a way that...
Race still has an impact, even to this day. It's had an impact all my life. And I don't think I realized it early on because my mother... I come from a family in which we are loved. And so we have this... it's like a steel rod up my back. It's like, no, I have people who love me. So you can't mess with me. Because I can go home, because my people have my back. Well, my mother was a fearless warrior, because my father had her back. So I didn't see race in the way that they did. I didn't see economic differences in the way that people do today. It was when I got to UVA and I met really rich people that I realized I was poor, because it was like, oh! So these people have a lot of money, you know. But those things didn't define me. Because I still, to this day, don't believe I'm defined by the color of my skin. I'm not defined by my gender. I'm not defined by my bank account. I'm defined by my integrity and the value that I bring to whatever the situation is. And that's how they raised the five of us. So it's a huge, big deal to me. So as I approach life and as I look at life today, I maintain that same position. It's how I raise my own son. It's all about your integrity as a human being.
So through you obviously, you know, had a very important idea of the way you're going to live your life. Was there a point in which you decided, like, the law was going to be what you were going to pursue?
Yeah, I will tell you. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Now I'm trying to turn it off.
This is the sound of the Apple.
So sorry.
Don't worry.
I was trying to turn it off. The civil rights movement is what drove me to the law because the law is a vehicle for change. Mm-hmm. And it's still a vehicle for change. The law, I tell young people all the time, no matter what you want to do in life, a law degree is a fabulous tool.
Because so my parents told me, which is why I have a law degree.
Exactly, exactly. They were right. Because fundamentally, what does a law degree do for you? It teaches you how to write. It teaches you how to speak. And the most critical, critical thing it teaches you, how to solve problems. Well, if you can solve problems, you can do anything. So, yes, it was really clear to me that the law was the way in which all the problems could be resolved because we as a society, that's what's unique about America. We're a society of laws, and those laws give us great latitude, but we are a people who commit that we're all going to live a particular way, and when you walk outside of those rules, then the law is there to catch you.
And you went, where did you go to law school?
I went to Georgetown University Law Center.
And then at what point were you already thinking about the judiciary, or did that come later? How did you end up?
No, that's hysterical. That is like really hysterical. So I graduated from Georgetown as a corporate lawyer, mm-hmm. and I came to Philadelphia as a corporate lawyer. I love businesses. I love running a business. And so I thought this was like so cool and so exciting. And I had my own little law firm. I had one lawyer, a paralegal, and a secretary. And I'm happy. I'm rocking and rolling. I'm representing all these companies. They're small companies, but they're companies. They're real companies. And I'm so excited. And this is really great. And at the time I was married, and I was married to a state senator, and he says to me, "Renee, we want you to run for the bench." And I went, "Ha, no you don't." So then he had his best friend, who was also an elected official, call me and said, "We want you to run for the bench." I went, "No you don't," you know? And then they had the chairman of the Democratic Party call me, and he said, "Renee, I just want you to come visit me." I went, "Okay, no big deal," because my office was at 13th and Spruce. His office was at Broad and Walnut.
Very close.
Except he said, no, come meet me in my office in the neighborhood. I should have known something was wrong. When you go to his office in the neighborhood, you have to walk down a long corridor, and the corridor is lined with chairs, and there are all these constituents who are coming to see them. And so there are grandmothers, and there are young people, and there are old people, all kinds of people. And I walk down this corridor to see him, and he says, "Renee," he says, "you see all those people you walked by?" I said, "Uh-huh." He said, "They don't have anybody on the bench that looks like you." He said, "They need to know when they walk in a courtroom, they're going to be treated fairly. We want you to run for the bench." I was like, ah!
Wow, that changes your perspective, I suppose.
It totally changed my perspective. Totally changed it. And then I'll tell you a funny story really quickly. But so remember, I'm a corporate lawyer. So I'm thinking, but in Philly, all judges sit either criminal or family. That's their first assignment. And then you can go do other things, but that's the first assignment. But I'm thinking, I'm going to do this for 6 months, and I'm going to go over to civil, and I'm going to keep on being corporate. And I got to criminal, and it was love at first sight. I love the constitutional aspects of criminal law. It is so cool. Very cool.
In your career, what would you say is the most surprising place you found yourself, whether it was a job or location or engaging with someone?
So remember, I'm Southern, and I thought about this question a whole lot. I mean, I have sat next to and had dinner with people from Fortune 100 companies. I talked to people on the street, homeless people, regular people. I mean, it was one of the things about me when I walked to Philly. I say hi to everybody. They weren't used to that. I'm breaking y'all down, though, because people all now say hi to me, you know. But you know, and so I thought about it, and one of the coolest people I ever sat next to was Smokey Robinson. Oh my gosh, that was fun. He's a flirt, though. He's a real flirt. You know? But really, you know, so it really isn't a person, because I'm so blessed in life to have talked to so many different people, and I get such great joy out of them, whether it's Jolly, the lady that cleans our offices, or the CEO of Wells Fargo. I get the same joy out of talking to all of them. But a cool thing that I did was I went ziplining through the Puerto Rican rainforest.
Wow.
That was fun. That was really fun. And then this past summer,
my kids love the zip lines.
Zip lining is cool. You know, it's scary, but cool, especially when you do it in the rainforest. And then this summer, I went dune buggy riding in the Nevada desert. And that was cool, too. It's really, though, when you do it, it's like an orchestra, because the wind is whistling through your helmet, you know, and you got these goggles on, and there's no roads, and you're flying over cliffs, and it is really cool.
That sounds beautiful.
I've
never been to, I've been to some of the state parks and things, but never just out in the open road, as it were.
Yeah, you want to go in the desert. This was in the desert.
You've done a couple of different things in your career. Was there a point at which you said, you know, you had a lot of ambitions, clearly. We said, I've kind of made it, or I'm a success.
No, not even to today. Not even to today, because I woke up today with the same drive that I've awakened every year of my life. And it's like, what am I going to do? How am I going to make a difference? What's going to be my impact?
And you credit that to your kind of upbringing?
Really, absolutely.
If people, you said you speak to young people a lot, so how do you think you instill that in people?
When I want them to understand is that you define who you are, not society. So when you look in the mirror, that's the ultimate test every day. Do you like who you see looking back at you? And if you don't, you control the path that you take by the choices that you make. So you may not go to the best school. You may not live in the quote-unquote mm-hmm. best neighborhood. But if there is just even one person in your life who loves you, a grandmother, a great aunt, a teacher, a minister, it doesn't matter. If there is even just one person who loves you, and that person will love you until you love yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you love yourself, you can do anything.
How did you go from being in the judiciary, and then did you retire and then decide, okay, and then you decided to go to the American Red Cross, or they asked, they said, hey, you want to come? Was it a similar situation how you became a judge? No, someone came and said,
yeah,
hey,
ready? Actually, it was so okay. So I loved being a judge. I'll never tell anyone anything different. I loved being a judge.
I like judges.
Complete, you should like judges because you have a good one in your family. But it's complete intellectual freedom. It's like very cool. It's very empowering. And particularly when you're a trial judge like I was and your dad was, you know, just you create the record and everybody else has to live with the record you created. It is really powerful. However, I also saw some colleagues who stayed on the bench too long, and I remember being in the elevator, and I heard these young lawyers making fun of an older judge. And this judge, she had opened so many doors and paved the way for so many people to come behind her. She had done some things that still have not been superseded. And they were making fun of her. And I thought, I don't want to be there. And I actually stopped them and said, you have no idea what she has done for all of us. But
good,
I didn't want to be that person,
right?
You know? And so I went to meet with a friend who owns an executive search firm, and she said to me, oh, Renee, judges are hard to place. I said, why? She says, nobody knows what y'all do. I said, well, fundamentally what we do is we analyze data, and we make hard decisions. I said, that's what I get paid to do. I get paid to make decisions. She said, that's an interesting way to look at it. I said, it's true. And I said, look, don't worry about it. I said, if you think of me, that's great. But if you don't, I'll run again and, you know.
Figure it out later.
And figure, because I love being a judge. So it's not like I'm unhappy. So this was in the spring of 10. In February of 11, she called me and she said, Red Cross is looking for a CEO. I want you to come in and interview. I said, oh, the Red Cross is a good organization. And literally what I knew about the Red Cross at that time was I gave blood every 6 weeks, and I wrote a check when the disaster was big enough to make the news. That is everything that I knew. But I knew it was good. So I said, okay, I'll come in. And I came in to interview, and at the end of the interview, I said to her, I said, well, you know, when this process is over, when it's not inappropriate, because remember, I'm a judge, so I've got these really big ethical walls. And I said, when the process is over and they've hired somebody, would you let me take you to lunch and tell me what did I do well, what didn't I do well, help me figure out how to be better for the next time you think of me. And she said, oh, I'd love to. I said, great. I said, but I got to run. I got a jury waiting. And she said, so she called me that afternoon. I was in my chain. I was actually in the robing room signing orders. And she said, they loved you. And I burst out laughing. She said, no, I'm serious. They loved you. And the rest is history.
And you've done an amazing job there.
Oh, thank you.
Your reputation and what you've done. Now we understand that you're looking for your next great opportunity.
Yes, I am. As we speak, I'm evaluating my next adventure.
Is it dune buggy or zip lining?
It will have the same level of intellectual freedom, I hope. So, yes, I am looking for my next great adventure. I likewise would never tell anyone I had anything negative to say. I loved this experience. I built my own team. Every member of my senior team I hired. We crafted a vision. I think we've worked very hard to make a difference in our region. We designed some new programs that don't exist anywhere else. I have a phenomenal board of directors, and the volunteers just, it is easy to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning when they call me to go meet these men and women who have gotten out of their beds to go help someone they don't know. So it's very inspiring. But it is time for me to tackle a new mountain, And so I'm evaluating which mountain I'm going to climb as we speak.
This next question may kind of help you there, perhaps. So if you could have done something other than the law, what career path do you think you might have taken?
I probably would have wanted to get... I probably would have wanted to get... So the rational, appropriate adult answer is to have gotten an MBA, okay? Because I really do love business. Mm-hmm. So one of the cool parts about my job that people don't understand, I run a massive business. Mm-hmm. I run a massive business that has a just really expansive logistical side that people have no appreciation of. So I run a really sophisticated business, and I like that. So yes, an MBA would have been a cool thing, but I've learned all of that in my service in the community. But if you ask me my fantasy job...
Go on.
Go ahead.
Listeners, if you know someone who can help her.
Okay, and just in case, okay? Child, I could take Chris Matthews down in a heartbeat. I could do Hardball in a minute, or be Lester Holt. Hoo! You know? So, yes.
I think you'd be great.
So because think about it for a minute. One of the things that I like is informing people, opening their eyes. They don't need to think like I think. And this is one of the things that I love about being an adjunct professor. Mm-hmm. My students, the university pays me to teach them particular sets of facts. And I tell my kids at every class, you're going to learn these facts. Having said that, the reason I do this is because I'm going to teach you how to think. You don't have to think like me, but you have to think. If we had been a thinking society, we would not be now wondering how Russians impacted our elections, because 56% of Americans get their news off Facebook. You will not sit in my class and quote Facebook or Wikipedia to me. You don't have to think like me, but you do have to think, and that's empowering. So the opportunity to have my own show, to be able to help uplift America and educate America and have America make choices that it's proud of, that would be the ultimate kingpin job. Which is what you're doing.
Okay, well, this is my little tiny way of doing that. So maybe you should start a podcast. it sounds like you had such a good, strong foundation in the way that you approach life. But I think we all, at some point, wish we could have maybe done something different. If you could go back in time and change one decision you made, what would it be?
Ooh. That's a difficult question for someone like me, because... Mm-hmm. I learn from my mistakes, and I share what I learn from my mistakes. Like I've told my sister and my baby brothers that they don't get to make my mistakes. They get to make their own, so they should learn from mine. So I don't see, I don't look at my life as saying, oh, if only I hadn't done X. So think about it a minute. I shared with you that I'm divorced, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't wish divorce on a dead dog. It is the most painful experience. But if I hadn't married my first husband, my only husband, I wouldn't have had my son, which is my greatest gift. He is the coolest person in the world. I'm so blessed to have raised him. So why would I undo that? Right. Even though divorce is painful, why would I undo that? And I think about the career decisions that I've made, you know? It's like, why would I undo them? I've learned so much from each experience. It's made me who I am. And I think really that's what we need to teach our young people. Mm. I don't have to be perfect. I'm going to stumble. I'm going to fall. But I can get back up. We have a camp, and I love this camp. When I first got to Red Cross, the camp was 1 week. I've now expanded it to 7 weeks. And the camp's sole purpose is to teach resiliency and leadership to our young people, because you can't change what life throws at you. And all of these kids have experienced some form of disaster, a fire, the loss of a loved one, something. You don't get to control that. You don't get to change that. But you do get to chart your own course. You get to bounce back from whatever life throws at you so that you're better and stronger. And there's a song that your listeners ought to download and hear. And it's called, I Am a Conqueror is Jessie Smollett and Estelle.
We'll put it in the show notes for sure.
You should put it in the show. I'm telling you, I am a conqueror. I'd rather stand tall than live on my knees. And that's what we teach the kids. So I can't really say to you, oh, I would undo that, because anything I undo, it now sets me on a different path.
Can't mess with the time and space continuum.
Nah, don't want to. Don't want to. Find the beauty in every experience, even the ones that hurt.
I love that. Now, Judge, we're going to go on to the 9 rapid-fire or not-so-rapid-fire questions. I found these aren't as rapid as everyone thinks. Some of them are. So here we go. So is it better to be a planner or a doer?
You can't do if you don't plan.
So, but people plan without doing. They just...
They go...
Not well.
Okay, so hey. Plan twice, cut once.
Fair enough. Are you a risk taker or more risk averse?
I'm a risk taker, but I'm a thoughtful risk taker. So no, I'm not jumping off the cliff, but I am ziplining.
There you go. Is it better to make connections online or offline?
Oh no, it's much better to look a person in the eye. When you make connections online, people can tell you anything, show you anything, but when you look a man or a woman in the eye, then you know who you're dealing with. So yes, face to face.
I agree. What's more important, the journey or the destination?
The journey. The absolute journey. But having said that, the other thing I tell my kids, set your goals high. Mm. There are many paths to your ultimate dream, you know? You don't know where life is going to take you. I wanted to be a pediatrician when I was little. And I do a lot of work in the healthcare space, so I've not given it up, but I've traveled many paths. Set your dreams high and go for it, because the journey is the joy.
It reminds me of two quotes that I quote often, which is, one is, you know, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Yes.
John Lennon said. And the other one I love is, you know, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll be among the stars.
Exactly. It's all about the journey. Yeah. It's all about the journey.
Can you name something on your bucket list? So you've been ziplining and you've been dune bugging. Is there anything else on your bucket list?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many things on my bucket list. I just have to wait for the State Department to clear them, because I want to go to the pyramids. Uh-huh. Okay. I want to stand on the Great Wall in China.
I've done that.
You know,
it's
see? Yeah. See how cool. And I want to go on a photo safari in Zimbabwe. And in Zimbabwe in particular, because I have friends who've done that already, and they say that's the best place to go take pictures of the animals in Africa. And I want to, if they could ever clean it. Okay, so yeah, it needs to be clean. I wanna float down the Nile like Cleopatra. You know? Yes, there are lots of things on my bucket list.
They're all great. What one book would you recommend to help people be more successful?
I think everyone should read, number one, read Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. Yes, Hidden Figures. It is a movie, people, but read the book. Because the story of Hidden Figures tells you is that America did not conquer space until it began to use all of its talent without regard to race or gender. Wow. And so when we use all of our talent, then we touch the moon. So I'd recommend Hidden Figures. But also, I'm a Hamilton junkie. Mm-hmm. I saw the movie, I saw the play with the original cast. I listen to the music constantly, and I'm reading the book. Now, it's dense, but it's definitely worth reading. I'd also recommend Team of Rivals, okay. Doris Goodwin.
Again, I'll put these down in the show notes, people have access to
them. Seriously, they should read Team of Rivals, because it shows you what is really important. It shows you the power of collaboration and reinforces that message. You don't have to think like me, but we have to think, and we have to be committed to the resolution of a common problem.
Great. Name one of your favorite movies.
Ooh, boy. Okay, you really want me to tell people all my business. The Godfather.
You're going to make him an offer, okay.
Hey, I'm going to make you an offer. But the book is even better than the movie, but I do like The Godfather.
What would the title of your autobiography be? That's my very bad Godfather impersonation.
So I think about that, because one of the things on my bucket list is to write a book. I tell people all the time, I've got at least 2 movies and 3 books in me. And I think right now is that I think about the journey to success. And honestly, on a serious note, I think I'm going to write something very soon called I Don't Sleep at Night. And I don't sleep at night because I don't like what I see in America right now.
Oh,
this
powerful.
Is not my country. My country is a country that it brings out the best in all of us. It lets us chase our dreams. And as long as you treat people with dignity and respect, America is a great place to be. And these people who talk about make America great again, they're not talking about our America. They're talking about some fictional land where only the elite have privilege. In my America, hard work, integrity, creativity, that's what makes us great.
That's fantastic. I look forward to reading it.
Thank you.
If you could be credited with inventing something, what would it be and why?
Gosh, if I could be credited with inventing something. Wow. That's a really, really, really good question. Yeah. Probably if I could invent anything, Elon Musk thinks he's going to get there, but maybe I'll get there before he does. But I want one of those, you know, George Jetson cars.
My son, when I told him about the fact we're going to have self-driving cars, when will we have cars in the sky?
Exactly. I'm with your son. Let's put those cars in the sky. Yeah. So, so we can explore the world and we can break down barriers and we can get to each other faster.
Love it. Well, Judge Hughes, I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been really amazing. Is there anything at the moment you want to promote or share with people, whether it's the American Red Cross or your upcoming book? And is there where people can find out? Are you on social media at all?
Oh, I am. I'm on Twitter at Judge Hughes. Okay.
I'll put that in the show notes.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but I'm going to be real with you. I look at it maybe once a month. But I do like Twitter. I do like Twitter, and I heard they're going to 240 characters.
Yes, announced today.
Should be interesting.
Yeah.
Should be interesting. But yes, I am on social media, and I'm on LinkedIn. And I think the thing that I'd like for everyone to really, really focus on is that even as this show runs, the Caribbean, and particularly Puerto Rico, will not have been rebuilt. Texas and Florida will rebuild faster than the Caribbean. And if they could just take a little bit of time out of their day to do something to help someone else in need, as we think about the 3.5 million people in Puerto Rico, as we think about the homeless people that we walk past, just think of one little something that you can do that makes the day better for somebody else, because we are the blessed. We are so fortunate. And to whom much is given, much is required.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for that. Thank you again, and I really appreciate everything you've said. It really has been inspiring. And most of all, I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots. Hey there, podcast listeners. Thanks so much for giving me your attention. I appreciate your time. And if you made it this far to this outro, that means you may have listened to the whole podcast, which is awesome. My hope is you got some value, some little nugget out of this piece of edutainment. If so, I'd be very grateful if you would subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a glowing review, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. You can visit our website, 9dotspodcasts, for all the deep, rich content. Thanks again for helping me connect the dots.